instituted by Marcus Modi Versified. So I want to, let you know, you should be warned, I will speak with a strong accent. So not just a Chinese accent, it will be a mathematical accent. So at least, I realize nobody instructs the speaker for the first talk. I hope, if you need clarification, please do, because that might be a problem. Okay, so sorry for a general title. So what I'm going to talk about, actually, because I couldn't make up my mind what I want to talk about. So I will really focus on the 3+1 models I wrote down with my colleague, Kevin Walker. And I will be more very technical in the sense I will really outline how to write down the Hamiltonian. And actually, I will focus on really all my confusions, what I don't understand. So really, I want to throw you at some questions which I'm completely confused. And I also should say, this language barrier is really big. I realized this by going to Matthew's class. I took his graduate class in UCSB with Michael Friedman. And the first year, we didn't learn anything, so we repeated the second time. It's not Matthew's a bad teacher, it's just even the language is a problem. It was a good experience. Actually, he got an apple from us. So I'm a better teacher.
I learned it, but I didn't remember it.
Okay. I will remind you again later. Okay, so if you ask a mathematician, what is mathematics? I think you will get all kinds of different questions. But I would just say, it's fair to say, we're all excited about former patterns. And once we recognize something, we try to classify. So that's what we do. One thing which I recognize is there's something now, a new pattern, which is called a topological quantum field theory. So actually, it's simple enough, I want to really tell you exactly what it is mathematically. So I will have two slides. So the first one, I will just give you the idea, then the second one, I'll give you exactly the mathematical axiom. So a n plus one topological quantum field theory, it's kind of a two layers of structures. And I use a V, actually has a name called modular functor. So what it does is, if you are handed a n-dimensional manifold, you have to think about space, and then you are supposed to get a Hilbert space. And if you have an n plus one manifold, the n manifold should have no boundary. If you have an n plus one manifold, you should think about space-time, and now you should think a partition function. But it should be a little bit more generalized. We are mathematicians, we push to extreme generality. So what you do is, you take your n plus one manifold, it might have a boundary. So the boundary will be an n manifold. According to my first part, the boundary will receive a Hilbert space. And now my n plus one manifold, what it does is pick up a Hilbert space in this Hilbert space. So if you think about the n plus one manifold just as a state, it's determined exactly a state in your Hilbert space. And then to be a topological quantum field theory, you want this generalized partition function to be topological invariant. That's easy to say. Another important thing is there's a very important manifold in the whole subject, which is the empty set. And it's a manifold of every dimension. So therefore, this has two things. As a n manifold, it should receive a Hilbert space, and it's one-dimensional. That's the first axiom. And then, if you think about this, the empty manifolds have an empty boundary. So if you think this as an n plus one manifold, determine a vector in this vector space, and that's a number, and that's your partition function. And it's a topological theory, so it's better to be a topological invariant. And I speak in very generality, but actually you know one very well, which is the Torrey code. So what happens is, oh, by the way, this is a notation. So as a mathematician, we do the following. If you write out a manifold, you put a superscript that you want to emphasize the dimension. So Y2 will be a two-dimensional manifold, a surface. So if you have a surface, a two-dimensional manifold, and you write down the famous Kitaev Torrey code Hamiltonian, and you pick up the ground state manifold, that will give you my Hilbert space here. Okay? And for the torus, will be four-dimensional. And most people here are familiar with that, but actually I want to challenge you to think about, if I give you a closed three manifold, what is the partition function? Okay, so actually Witten was the person first I think, talk about top particle quantum field theory, and then RT, I wrote down the axiom. And the definition mathematics is extremely simple, just one line. So what is a top particle quantum field theory? It's a symmetric monoidal functor. I don't expect you to know much from that single line. So let me unwrap the whole definition. Here are all of them. So that's not too bad. So what you need is to set up these two layers of structures. And so if I wrap that word, so we have things. So first, you have an oriented closed N manifold, you will get a vector space. If you have an N plus one manifold, the boundary, you determine a state in that Hilbert space. And then they should have the following five axioms, which is extremely natural. So the first one I already told you, the empty set receives one-dimensional Hilbert space. And that's like means this is an N manifold. And then if you have a disjoint union of two spaces, you should have no entanglement. So just get the tensor product. Don't do anything fancy. If you reverse the orientation of your manifolds, you get a dual vector space. And that's extremely natural. So there's nothing can you know, think of anything other than that. And then the fourth one is topological environment. If you have a space, N, which is n-dimensional, if I realize if there's a blackboard, I won't spend so much time on these stupid pictures. It's hard to draw. So if you have a Y, and if you have a cylinder, that means if you go from here to here, there are no topological change. So therefore, there should be no evolution. So that means this is the identity. But now you think this is kind of strange. I said this Z should be a vector, but I use this important linear algebra fact. If you take the boundary of a Y cross R, there are two copies, Y and minus Y, the reverse orientation. Minus goes to dual. A vector in V tensor V dual, that's a linear map. So I can equally say it's a linear map. So this is the identity map. And the last one is the most important axiom, so the glue axiom. So suppose you have three, well, you have two we call cobordism. It's just a space-time N plus one manifold. So this is X1, and this is X2. And this has boundary Y1, Y2. This has boundary Y2, Y3, and you glue them together. And according to the axiom, this determines a linear map, and this determines another linear map. And then we glue them, what do you want? You just compose them. So that's the last axiom. And I should mention, the so-called easy TKFT Chern-Simon theory does not fit into this framework. What's wrong is this composition is only true up to a phase, and that's the anomaly. Actually, Xiaogang has first, you know, has real experience, you know, about this language. Some physicists try to explain to mathematicians what is a band insulator. Extremely hard. We couldn't get it. Chern-Simon theory is extremely difficult for mathematicians, and then here people say that's easy. But anyway, Chern-Simon theory does not fit into this framework because it has anomaly, which means this does not hold. Okay, so I just give you more examples of which you know. There's a very general construction, which is if you give a spherical fusion category, and I'll explain to you what it is later, you will get something called Trapf-Weyl 2 plus 1 top particle quantum field theory. And since we are trying to do physics, so we want a unitary spherical fusion category. And then this spherical can drop. It's just a unitary fusion category. Believe it or not, actually, Alexei Kitaev discovered this. Unfortunately, he discovered a little bit later. The Japanese Yamagami already discovered, which is if you have a unitary fusion category, it's already spherical. But anyway, so there are two large class of 2 plus 1 dimension top particle quantum field theories. One is the famous Langevin model, which I will go over. And then there's also the Kitaev model. Kitaev has lots of models. There's Honeycomb model, there's Maharana model. So what I'm talking about, the original 1997 paper. So he, for each finite group, he wrote down a not exact solvable only, it's rigorously solvable. And this is basically the diagram for Witten theory, the famous ones for Z2, that's the famous Torrey code. So for every finite group, you have a model. Actually, I'm interested in one for S3 right now. So actually, these two models, when they are both defined, they are equivalent. And for me, this is a simple thing. It's called Morita equivalence. But if you really want to see a very concrete proof, like somebody here, Oliver, wrote down the beautiful formula. It's basically Fourier transform from one to the other. So they are the same thing when they are both defined. Okay, so now I want to talk another, it's my first question, which has puzzled me for a long time, which is we can easily do demotion of top particle quantum field theories. Here's what you do. Suppose you are given an n plus one top particle quantum field theory, and you want to demote this to an n plus one top particle quantum field theory for some m less than n. So what do? It's very easy. Pick any closed n minus one dimensional manifold k. Most time I will talk about the modular functor. I won't talk about the partition function. So if you have m manifolds y, you are supposed to give a Hilbert space. What do? You take y cross k, and that's promote into n dimension. You already have an n plus one top particle quantum field theory. So you already have a Hilbert space. Just give it to this guy. And that will be a top particle quantum field theory. And there are many m's, there are many k you can pick. So there are lots of them. Like I want to do kk, but it's not good looking. So if you do this for 2 plus 1, and you will get lots of 1 plus 1 dimension top particle quantum field theory. Because there's only one interesting connected one manifold, which is the circle. You want to give this a Hilbert space, what do? So you pick S1 as the k here. And then you just say, well, take any 2 plus 1 dimension quantum field theory. You assign the torus Hilbert space to the circle. And that's giving you a 1 plus 1 dimension top particle quantum field theory. And there are lots of them, and there are infinite many. And now we know that something puzzles me. Physicists always told me, Xiaoguang told me, there are no intrinsic top particle order in 1 plus 1 dimension. What happens to them? So there's a natural gas. You know, they are symmetry protected, but that's a little bit naive. You know, it's more than that. So I really don't know the answer. So I do have a good colleague, so I asked Matt Hastings. He spent a week and think about this. I do believe that this is true, not having intrinsic top particle order. But it's not completely clear because in the literature, as far as I know, the key ingredient to prove this is Matt Hastings' area law. And he only proved this for non-degenerate system. And these are degenerate ones. So it's not completely clear. I hope that they are not, but it seems like well, Matt Hastings believes it's trivial. So. I'm talking about boson. I will come back to fermion later. If you don't recognize, there are no fermion for the moment. I give you an axiom says, if you have two space destroyer union, you should get tensor. That's rule out all fermions. This famous minus one is really a pain to deal with. Okay, so that's about demotions. Now I'm going to do promotion. As we know, as in life, promotion is much harder. So what I want to do is I want to promote. so I want to promote 2 plus 1 level one model to 3 plus 1 dimension. In this case, it's not that hard. OK, so I thought about it. I think I really want to tell you what is a unitary fusion category. Actually, it's extremely elementary. It's much more easy than transcendental theory. OK, so here's what it is. If you really want an example, the first one is if you take any finite abelian group, well, not finite, just any finite group, you have an example. Okay, so that's the first class of examples. Any finite group will be a unitary fusion category. Okay. So now let me give you the axiom. So what is a unitary fusion category? It's just a quadruple. So there's a set, a finite set. There's a bunch of integral matrices. And there's a bunch of matrices. There's a bunch of plus minus one. And that's it. Of course, they need some conditions. So let me start with L. So L is just any finite set. And for the people here, it's very easy to imagine what they are. These will be your particle types in your anionic system. So you have a particle, you have a dual particle, you have a ground state. And then what you can do, you can fuse them. If you fuse two particles, we are talking about, you know, actually hypothetical anionic systems. So there are many particle times come out, and they might come out with a multiplicity. So I have this non-negative integer multiplicity. So what you can do is you can take any particle type, and you can assign a matrix, which is NA. So the matrix, the BC entry, is just this multiplicity NBC. Okay. If you talk about group, you take two elements, G, you take a G if you multiply H, and then you know this is just the delta function, right? Be either 0 or 1.
Do you require this to be abelian?
No, I don't need to. abelian will be, I will put a word later, we'll put a word braided, which I will do next. So I think that these F matrices, if you listen to Xiaogang, you have seen this many times, but I just, what they are is, if you take four particle types, and then there will be a matrix, and the entries will be called 6-digit symbol. I just want to introduce one terminology, which is, if you give me four particle types, I call they are admissible if there's at least one particle here, which will come out from both fields AB and fields CD. Otherwise, I would say inadmissible. And then this satisfies the so-called Pentagon equations. And I find them very beautiful. People might find them really, really frightening. And so this is the most difficult part of the definition. This have to satisfy something called the Pentagon, which is completely elementary, just high school math. And then there's a bunch of a plus or minus one. This is encode the so-called spherical structure. So what this does is tells you how to consistently create annihilate particles and take a quantum dimension. And they're all related by a bunch of polynomial equations. So that's what they are. And if you take these two, that's something mathematicians call a hypergroup, which means when you multiply two group elements, you don't get a single one, you get a set. And the each element comes with multiplicity. That's called a hypergroup. But there are no inverse. And that's it, actually. You know, if you really want examples, there are two ways to do it. First, you can do mathematical theory, or you can do what Xiaogang did, which is just run the computer. It's just a bunch of polynomial equations. And as I said, any finite group will give you one.
Yeah, sorry, and you don't require a basic particle and a dual particle?
I do require the dual particle. I hide that. I didn't really hide. I said it. You know, if you think of a particle, every label has a dual label. The dual thing here is the inverse of the group element. Okay. So all the group examples called abelian theory, and then there's the famous non-abelian theory. I just list them to show you. That the Ising theory, that the Fibonacci theory. I think the Fibonacci theory is kind of like my theory, but most people are talking about Ising. So let's talk about Ising. So the set have three elements, one sigma psi, and the matrix for the identity, for the trivial particle is always identity. For the sigma particle, that's the matrix. And for the psi, that's the matrix. I just want to point out one thing. If you take the largest eigenvalue of this matrix, that's your quantum dimension. The same thing here. And then there are these 6-digit symbols and fusion matrix. So this is the famous, the sigma-sigma four particle. This is the Hardeman matrix. This is the only non-trivial interesting one. And then there are this sigma-psi give you minus one. And then the other F symbols, either zero or one, depends on ABCD is admissible or not. Okay, so that's all you have. And that's the Ising theory. This minus one is a very important minus one. That's actually encode the Majorana fermion thing. Okay, so basically.
Can you explain the epsilon actually?
This epsilon, that's the so-called spherical structure. So if you have like the L and N, you have fusion. But what you can do is you can take a you can take two particles and fuse them to a third one, but you cannot create an annihilate. If you want to create annihilate, and then you need to basically, what happens is, you know, you have this, but if you want to do this, and that's like a special this guy, and there's a very subtle consistency, and it's encoded by this epsilon.
Can you give an example epsilon equal to minus one? Is it spherical as also as a minus one example?
Oh, actually, it's, if you take the sister of Ising, SU2, level two. You will see a minus sign.
SU2 level two.
They have exactly the same fusion rule, but there's a Frobenius indicator that will give you a minus.
So this N is a symmetric, it means it's abelian, right?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. I actually.
Both are not symmetric.
I think abelian means like Ni.
Abelian
fusion means I think Ni and G are commute.
Abelian just means each line there is only one element at the bottom, right?
No, there's a different meaning of abelian. You mean you are talking about abelian particle. Xiaogang is talking about A tensor B. It's a sense of B tensor A up to equivalence.
where is the spin? I mean, the pi of 16.
That has not come in yet, because I'm talking about only fusion category. When I'm talking about braiding, I think we'll come in. That's what the next one after. Okay, so just I forgot when I start. So for the graph calculus, so I just quickly to tell you, I already said, you know, if you do the process of fusion, creation annihilation, that's give you a planar tree. They suggest simple, just give you a way to assign an amplitude for each process. So that's actually what it does. Okay, so now let me just remind you the Levenway model, then that's the one we'll generalize. I won't give you the beautiful formulas. You can always ask both of them here. So the setup is always the same. So I will have a Hamiltonian with two kinds of terms. And there's a vertex term, there's a Plaquette term. So the vertex term is always just the, first I want to say what's the Hilbert space. The Hilbert space is always, you take your label set, which is a finite set. And then you assign each edge as something in your quantum information called QD. So that's just this Hilbert space C to the L. Okay. So you assign each S C to the L, and then you tensor them all together. Okay, that's your Hilbert space. So it's always the same setup. And then at each vertex, if you think of a basis element, that will be just a label on each edge. So that's a basis element. And then the first term will be enforced that we've fused this four of them, and we're back to the trivial thing. That's the first term. It's like a Gauss law in electricity. And then there's this complicated Plaquette term. So what do? You take a Plaquette, want to enforce right, no flux through this Plaquette. And that's a very beautiful mathematical way to do it. You write down a projector. And then what you do is you think about the graph calculator, just throw the projector into this Plaquette. And then one way to compute it, just this is gone because of normalization. Another way to compute it is you start with this fuse to this line, and then you do F move and come back. And then you get this, you know, it's a horrible formula, you say beautiful formula, you get a long expression. And then they are equal. And that's this term here. Yeah. So that's how you get the second term. And then once you write out these two terms, it's tautology. They all commute with each other. So it's rigorously solvable. And there's a gap. And everything just completely follows. So they all commute with each other. So the Hamiltonian I will talk about all have this property, which is the formed by QDs, and then they all commute to each other. They have the same form. Okay, so now both are gone, and I'll ask about the braiders. So now I want to talk about the Hamiltonian I wrote down with Kevin Walker, which I think definitely Xiaogang and Michael Levin can write this down if I told them they do exist. I think at that point they don't know they exist. It's a very small subtlety, and all you need is one extra thing, which is for your input, you need something called a braiding. Okay, so the Levenway model, you don't need a braiding. Therefore, you don't even need this to be true. Okay, so you don't even need to be, the fusion is not necessarily abelian, just any fusion category. For this one, I need this to be braided. So what it means is that if you take two particles, you can braid them. By the way, when I write braiding, I read downwards, so it's kind of a funny thing. So you need a braiding, and the way to encode this is using some other matrices. So I said that a unitary fusion category is a quadruple of label set, matrices, matrices, sign. And here I just need more matrices, R, which is for any ABC in your label set, you get a matrix RABC. Okay. So that's what you get. And then you need to satisfy the hexagon relations. But it's another bottom polynomial equation, so it's not that simple, not that hard. And so that's what you will get for this so-called unitary braided fusion category. Okay. So the new ingredient is I need a braiding. To give you the example, for the Eisen theory, that's the non-trivial braiding. Actually, in this case, this matrix is 1 plus 1. It's 1 times 1 dimension, so it's just a number. So that's the numbers. And that's for the Fibonacci. And back to answer Matthew's question. So once you have this braiding, everything consistent. And now, I told you earlier, if you have a unitary fusion category, if you have the process of fusion, creation, annihilation, there's a way to assign amplitude. And now you can add one more elementary process, which is braiding. Okay? So now if you take any process consists of fusion, it depends on how you read this, fusion, splitting, braiding, creation, and then annihilation, and you have a consistent way to assign amplitude. Now that's like the axiom of all this giving you. So it just set up to give you a consistent way to assign amplitude. And then the topological twist is just you assign amplitude to this process. And this amplitude is always equal to theta A times this guy, which is theta A quantum A. So that's a topological twist. And you can read this as you have your particle, you create another pair, you braid them, then you annihilate. And that's the amplitude.
I have a question. I mean, so in the Levin-Wend models that time versus invariant, I guess you don't have any of these phases. Is the R the identity?
Yeah, actually, that's exactly screwed up Xiaogang and Michael. So when they try to, if you read their paper, there's one section they said, if you take a symmetric tensor category, you can do any dimension you want. And the point is that for a symmetric tensor category, this equals this. Oh, yeah, that's right. So that means you don't care about this. It's just like this. And that's the easiest way to get time reversal invariant and go to any dimension. And all I did with Kelvin is, if you are a little bit more careful, you can incorporate the braiding into it. So for time reversal, actually, I have to admit, I have extremely hard time to understand what is time reversal. I just couldn't get it. I do have an excuse. So what I want to do is I want to formulate time reversal symmetry in a categorical language. I try to decide if it's doable or not. I kind of now I believe it cannot be done, but I have a hard time to understand what is this time reversal in words. Okay, so now I want to introduce the most important concept, which is a transparent particle. Okay, so you have a set of particles. When a particle is transparent, so T is transparent if this cannot be distinguished from the ground state by double braiding. So if you take any other test particle, if you do a double braiding, this just nothing happens. And I call this T transparent.
Okay. That's so,
for any X. For any X. Okay. So basically, this is a fake ground state. There's no way for you to detect this using double braiding. Okay. That's what we call a
trivial particle. Is that kind of trivial particle?
Trivial particle is always transparent. Okay. So trivial particle is always transparent. Are there others? So if you take any discrete gate theory, if your system consists of only boson or fermions, and then everything in there is transparent, because this is plus or minus one, we square them, obviously be gone. So therefore, if you have a unitary fusion category, I will say this is a modular. If, other than the trivial particle, none is transparent. Okay. So that means you have no fake ground state. And that would be called modular. Okay. But that's the one we're focused on. So that's basically the input of the model, which I will write down next.
So you call it modular because only in that case is modular invariant?
Yes. So modular means only in that case you can give a representation for the modular group.
So the trivial particle, the transparent particle actually
is obstruction for you to go from planar to high genus surfaces. Uh-huh. So if you take any unitary braided fusion category, you have a perfectly good theory for planar process, but you cannot put this on the torus as a topological theory because it's not modular invariant.
Yes. Does that mean S
matrix is not invertible? Yeah, exactly. That's the same. This is an equivalent statement. Famous S matrix, the determinant of this is zero. It's not zero. This is modular. This is the same statement.
Oh, so that's just because this trivial transparent particle has a spin zero?
Not necessarily spin zero, actually.
Oh, sorry. I'm just trying to understand why.
Okay, so I can, if you know the language of conformal field theory, you have this modular S matrix.
Yeah.
So a transparent particle corresponding to a column which is proportional to the first column. Okay, so now I want to write out the Hamiltonian. So this is basically a redo Langevin model. So I think what I learned from physicists is that let's just think about the cubic lattice, that's all. So let's think about the cubic lattice. And so I want to, that's all you have in the world. So if you take each edge of the cubic lattice, let's put on a qdit. And then I can write down exactly the Langevin Hamiltonian by E force, because a basis now will be each edge has a label in your particle type. And then when you enforce, each vertex fused to the trivial particle, and each plaquette, which is a square, have flux zero. And I can do that, but it's not convenient to write down a formula. So in order to write down a formula, I will do a resolution, which means I will break this cubic lattice into a trivalent lattice. And okay, this is another small mistake, not a mistake, it's not the oversight of Shogun and Michael Levin, which is they choose a resolution which is arbitrary, has no good symmetry. So therefore, they couldn't write down consistent Hamiltonian. And this is a very important contribution we made, which is there's a completely symmetrical way to write down the resolution of a cubic lattice to trivalent lattice. If you think about the projection, this is Z3 symmetric. So now what you do, you take each vertex and you resolve this into a trivalent thing. And then you assign each edge, including the new one, a qdit, so you tensor them all together. And then the old squares now become decagons, which is a tangon. Okay? And now what you want to enforce, each of this decagon has flux zero. And that's all you do. And if you want to write down the Hamiltonian, and here's what it is. And you can see, you know, I have a hard time to use the PowerPoint to do math. And I complain to Microsoft, they won't do anything. I guess when I have a chance, I will complain again, but they just ignore me. Okay, so what you do is the following. So you just look at the one in the XY plane, you have a square. And when you resolve this, you get a decagon. And now you have 10 edges. So I start from here. This is the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one, the fifth one, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. Okay. So there are 10 sides. And then there are 10 called legs. That's not my term, that's the Shogun and Michael Levin's term. So there are 10 legs, which is the one right after the edge. And then to write out the term, actually you need these 20 labels. Okay. So what you do is, so you think of a plaquette, and you label the original, well, the 10 edges of the resolve from the square from A1 to A10. And then you label the legs, the one which are not in the plaquette, but right next to each of them, A1 prime to A10 prime. And then if you do this process, you will see that the legs label, they don't change. What changes the original label? So they change into A1 double prime to A10 double prime. So therefore, to write out the Hamiltonian, all I need is to give you a matrix element. So the Hamiltonians of the term, you sum over the particle types, and then there's a factor which is given by the global quantum dimension, the top particle order, or the top particle entanglement entropy, D. And then there's a term corresponding to each particle type. And this, this operator has a matrix element for a basis, which is A1 through A10, and to another one, which is replaced by A1 double prime to A10 double prime. And the matrix element consisting of 10 F symbols and the four braiding eigenvalues. And that's it. And if this is a plus or minus one, this is exactly what Shogun and Michael Levin wrote down. We didn't do anything there. Just the new one is they are not plus or minus one. And then I claim they exactly commute with each other and exactly solvable and all the things just go on. Okay, so now let me talk about. Yeah.
3 more minutes and then there's a question.
Okay. Okay, three minutes,
well,
right?
You've yeah. Got 37, so.
Okay, so I think I can do because I really get the most technical part done. So okay, so now let me just go through a few things. So first, the ground state. The ground state is described by. Let me just give you the answer for. So the first thing is, if you take all the transparent particles, they form a subcategory. Okay, this subcategory is given by a finite group. This finite group of representation give you all the transparent particles. And then there's a very important twist, which is it's not always the representation of the finite group. And you can change some of them to fermions. And the way you do it is you choose an element in your group, which is central. And then that can be minus one. That's changed from boson to fermion. And then once you know the transparent particle, then if you take any closed three manifold, the gross state degeneracy is given by the first homology with a G coefficient if this G is abelian. So that's the gross state. I will skip the other part. And then how about excitations? Well, the point excitations are still boson fermion. And the most interesting, there are other type of excitations. So, you know, it can be any shape, it can be loop. So this is my second question. I'm completely convinced if you take a theory, even if it's modular, and then the bulk has no degeneracy, no fractionalization, no quasi, no abelian, no anion, mathematically it's still non-trivial, as long as your theory has a central charge not equal to 0 mod 8. For example, the toric code will be trivial. But if you take the three fermion sister of toric code, they have a central charge 4, so therefore this is non-trivial. Okay, so mathematically it's definitely non-trivial, but Matthew tried very hard to teach me how you think this is physically trivial, and I still don't know if this is true or not. But mathematically, it's definitely non-trivial. Okay, so and I won't go through this because this is a lot. So now you can ask the generalization of you know loop excitation. So this will be just loops. And actually for loops, it's kind of interesting. There are two ways to manipulate loops. One is you can exchange them. And that's just like exchange particle. And then you can take one and go through. And that's actually like braiding. And if you put this all together, you realize the statistic you get for loop excitation will be given by this so-called braid permutation group, or it's called loop braid group. And besides the relation of the braid group permutation, you have this mixed relation. And since I'm out of time, so I won't tell you. I just give show you this one kind of picture of the group. And let me tell you one more thing, which is puzzles me, which is the same thing. I want to argue that for modular case, the model is not mathematical trivial. So I told you using this four-dimensional partition function, there's another way to argue, which is the representation of the two-dimensional mapping class group is called a categorical representation. It's also non-trivial. So what you have to think about this is, if you have a torus excitation, a ring excitation, there's something analogous to this guy. And that's given by the central charge. Now let's skip the other one. OK, so another thing which I don't know is, what is the continuous limit? And mathematically, we do have a continuous limit. I like the first speaker introduced ribbing already. So the continuous limit is a ribbing net of liquid. So what it means is you don't really have a string. You have a framed string. So you have an infinitesimal normal direction. And that's what it is. It's like a membrane. And if you want to run on a field theory, I don't know. But my guess is this is the famous BF theory. OK, so now I take 2 minutes to because I decided to see the first speaker. We have something common, which is this kind of 3 plus 1 top-up quantum, which I talk about, mathematics is very boring. So for me, the frontier is somewhere else. What it is gapless fermions. So what is the most interesting 3 plus 1 top-order quantum field theory? There it is. It's the Donaldson-Witten theory. So this is basically it's a Young-Mills theory. And what Witten did is to write down a supersymmetric Lagrangian with a very complicated thing. And that's reproduced this top particle environment.
What dimension does this?
This is a 3 plus 1 theory.
No, no, the n equals 2 super Young Mills, what dimension does that live? This is also 3 plus 1.
This is 3 plus 1. Yeah, no, no. Just reproduce this one. It just reproduced the Donaldson. It's a 3 plus 1 theory.
This theory is not a unitary theory.
But let me finish with one slide, then we can go. I will actually address your question right away. OK, so here's my last slide. So Witten shows you cannot, for the theory he wrote down, cannot have both unitarity and the Lorentzian environment. You have to make up your mind, pick one of them, and it's gapless. And one thing which I know is if you demoted this 2 plus 1 theory, it's now the topological quantum field theory which we know. This theory is not semi-simple. So that, to me, is a hint of a fermion. And then you can ask, how about lattice realization? I don't know. And another more interesting thing is, Witten wrote a paper said, if you take the infrared limit of this theory, you get a sample Witten theory, and he speculates this is related to superconductors. I think I will stop here.